Blog Talk Radio.
Blue Shirt Underground, motherfucker!
Can't be at the Ranger fan. Can't be at the Ranger fan.
This is an unlawful gathering. This is an unlawful gathering.
The truth is out there. The truth is out there.
If Sam Rosen was here right now, Eddie, do you know what he would say?
He would
be at the Garden. What an intro. Beautiful. Uh-huh. Love it.
Thank you. I was a little worried if it'd be well received by yourself.
They're asking in the chat room who the music is. Frosty says, is it Ministry? Costa asks, is it Anthrax? And I have no idea.
It's Slayer.
Hall & Oates. That is a Carly Simon song. Good evening, everyone. Welcome to Blue Shirt Underground Radio. It is Wednesday, July the 6th. We hope you had a great holiday weekend. Eddie, how are you?
I'm doing pretty good. I know you're battling some physical maladies, but you're hanging in there with the cold and the whole thingamajig.
I'm going to cold and dust and... Like I told my wife, I've been pulling crusty dusties out of my nose all day. It's just
all right. It's a nasty mess.
I had to go there. Blue Shirt Underground, motherfuckers. Nice opening. I love it. I love it. It was beautiful. Well
Thank
done.
You.
Thank you guys all for being here. We'll have James Patrick in just a minute or two, and we'll be good to go. Hope you guys are having a great week, and we'll talk to James. We're going to take phone calls for James. So if you guys want to call in for James and you're in the chat room, let me know that you're calling for James and that you have a question for him. Phone number 646-478-4692. Because a lot of times we'll have a guest. I'll put you guys on with the guest. And you go, I really just wanted to talk to you guys. Or I leave you guys on hold. And then after the guest, I put you on the air and you go, oh, I really had a question for John Rattel when he was on the line, even though we never had John Rattel. So let me know.
Right, so
Let me know in the chat if you guys want to talk to James.
I'll go get James.
Okay.
And you mute me, and I'll signal you when we're ready.
All right. I will mute you now. All right. So Eddie is muted, and he will go get James Patrick. Let me know when he's back. And like I said, if you guys want to call it, John Sim next week, Frosty. By the way, since I didn't want to say anything because I was hoping he would answer me, but he has not as of yet, Frosty. I reached out to Bob Froese about 2 weeks ago, sent him an email to ask him if he'd want to come on to the show, you know, told him the whole bit, what we were about. And, you know, I told him that even though he didn't spend the bulk of his career with the Rangers, that he was... And I said that you were held in high regard by Ranger fans, and I specifically said, including one that calls himself Froese99 in our chat room, and we have nicknamed him Frosty. And I sent him this very nice email, and that's what I got back. So Reverend Bob Froese, so far, is non-responsive at best, I would call that. So, Mr. Froese, as I once called him when I met him, and he said, oh, please call me Bob. That's a true story. I was like 16 years old. He was still with the Flyers, actually, when I met him. So, Mr. Froese, Bob, Reverend Bob, Pastor Bob, whatever you want to call him, he has not responded to my reaching out. But without further ado, I believe we have Eddie back, so let me try and work this new switchboard here. See if Eddie, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Okay, good.
James Patrick is also with me, and maybe he could speak to why Mr. Bob Froese is not answering us.
Good evening, James. Welcome back to the program. Jim and Eddie with you, Blue Shirt Underground Radio. Yeah, I was just telling our audience how I reached out to Reverend Bob, Pastor Bob, Mr. Froese, Bob Froese, and so far he's been non-responsive. But that's okay. I understand he's busy. He answers to a higher calling these days than Blue Shirt Underground Radio.
Yeah, he does. I didn't know when I came into the conversation here, I didn't know if you had just finished talking to him or if you were still trying to track him down. I feel worse than you guys because I've been in Buffalo for 11 years now. Bob lives, I think, 10 minutes away from I do, and I've never ran into him or spoken to him. But my wife has seen him a few times and ran into him in the late spring, and we actually talked about getting together in the fall. So I might finally see him. But I know he's a pastor or reverend in one of the churches in Clarence, New York. And I guess that keeps him busy doing that.
So. I guess so. And we may have to send a gift to James to present to Pastor Bob. Maybe the home edition of Blue Shirt Underground Radio game that we like to give to as consolation prizes. And James could present that to Bob and say, you know, look, these guys aren't that bad.
Now,
well, I'd be happy to because it might be an opportunity for me to finally see him again after all these years.
Now, from what I've heard about Bob Froese, he had a little bit of a temperament in practice. I forgot somebody, one ex-ranger told me that he once threw his stick at him during practice. Do you remember Bob with that kind of demeanor, James?
Yeah, extremely intense. He wasn't that Christian-like on the ice. I don't think he used vulgar language anymore, but he still was very intense, and the face got red, and he had some anger in him when someone got too close to his space in the net. I think, you know, the strength of Bob is going was his intensity, but he sometimes took it out on his teammates in practice. It's hard, you know. Back in those days, you didn't shoot high on a goalie in practice. It seems like it's commonplace now. And I can remember, like, my whole career, like, you know, maybe once or twice I accidentally let a high shot go and, you know, and didn't feel too good about it. But you just, that unwritten rule back then, and it would happen once in a while, and if it did, that guy like Bob was coming after with a stick. So.
What was there? James, was there someone else who stands out when you were playing, somebody else that was that intense in practice and maybe, you know, his temper was always ready to flare like that?
There was always, you know, intense guys who played, played physical, you know, whether it was a practice or a game. I even remember, like, Mark Osborne was a guy who played real physical. I'm not making light of it, but Mark was a born-again Christian as well. But I just remember he was a guy, he finished checks, and I know he had some injury problems with the Rangers, but I remember, the time I spent with him, there was a few guys that ended up, coming and getting in fisticuffs with him in practice because he was playing it like a game. And even I know as a coach now, it's that fine line. Like, you want your players to practice hard. You want them to, more intense practice. That's how they do get better. But sometimes with an 82-game schedule, you got to take a step back and be smart. You don't want to injure your own teammates. As far as intensity, I've never seen probably the two hardest working goalies I played with were Mike Richter and Dominic Hasek. And Dominic Hasek was legendary. I know he was an eccentric, different guy, but he wanted to play He wanted to play 70 games a year, was extremely intense. I'd never played with a goalie who got scored on less in practice. You know, there'd be a practice where goalies are getting hundreds and hundreds of shots, and he would remember every goal that got scored on him. So that's, you know, that as far as the intensity. And Mike Richter was similar as far as his work ethic. He really worked hard, was in phenomenal shape. Before the Richter era, the goalies were always on the other shape side. But John Van Beesbrouck was in good shape, too. But it was still part of that era where the goalies were kind of chunky and overweight, and they didn't have to do much skating, didn't do off-season workout programs. Mike Richter was in better shape than 99% of the guys on the team, and worked extremely hard.
I had a question, and this was, it's kind of a, I guess it's not an odd question, but it's kind of out of left field, right field, center field, depending, you know, if you're a baseball fan, what position you like. But, you know, in the old days, and when I say the old days, you know, I'm talking the mid-80s, which aren't really that old, some of us, but there used to be a lot of, and I want to know if this happened in the Ranger dressing room, where older players, players that weren't with the team, would they come into the dressing room occasionally, you know, like, you know, for instance, a Rod Gilbert or, you know, Andy Bathgate? I don't know. Was that a common thing back then? Did you see a lot of that?
I never met Andy Bathgate. I knew Rod was around all the time. He would bring in teammates, Pete Stemkowski. I remember, you know, me and him, Vic Hatfield. You know, Rod, I probably was the liaison. He was, you know, I think he was doing community relations, but was just a real classy guy who would stop by the players' lounge and say, you know, always say a few words to different guys. And I remember Alf Nilsson coming around a lot. He was still living in New York, but hadn't been playing for a number of years. I think the teams got away from that, and I think they are trying to go back to it now. I know here in Buffalo, with our new ownership, he's really tried to reach out to the alumni. But I know whoever was in New York was always, you know, Rod would be the guy bringing them just outside the dressing room, and you'd at least get a chance to say hi or shake their hands. And Brad Park, I remember meeting Brad. You know, so again, for young players, meet some of the guys you grew up watching.
Now, as a player and/or coach, how do you view that? Do you think that's a helpful thing to have those guys around, or you know, maybe you don't want them mixing in and maybe giving a player the wrong advice?
Yeah, I don't. I don't think it. I really don't think I have ever seen it as a distraction. I know, you know, maybe a coach would be fearful. You get ex-players around and they say, no, don't do it the way he's telling you, do it this way. But I do think from guys telling about some old stories, some war stories, from, you know, camaraderie about with the team and some, you know, battle scars stories, I think that's a positive. I think there's so few... you know, guys who come back and even try and be a negative distraction. I don't see that happening. And I don't think, I do know, I heard this story this year about Jacques Lemaire and how many coaches he wanted around the team. And then a big, you know, he said, how do you know what they're saying to your players? How do you know you can trust them? And that's different. That's coaches. And I don't
right.
look at ex-players as the same way. I think, I can't say I ever met one who was negative, who wasn't, you know, positive or offering positive advice. And I think it's important for the history of teams to you know, keep ties with some of the ex-players. You know, I think it's, you know, they do great jobs, you know, keeping the community involved, you know, dealing with their involvement with charities. And keeping the history alive of the game. And you look at the Montreal franchise, and no one does it better than them. And I think every team could follow suit.
Yeah, I certainly agree. The reason I bring it up is because, recently I heard an interview with Barry Beck where he was kind of like shown the door. He's going,
sorry for interrupting. I do think, I know Barry's had a tough time getting accepted, and I just, I don't know whether showing the door or after he left the league having a tough time getting back in, but, you know, and I know he has contacted teams about getting involved as a coach, whether in the minors or skill development coach, and I think he certainly has something to offer with the experiences he's been through from a 18-year-old playing in the NHL, a very high draft pick, you know, a franchise defenseman, you know, single in a big city, and you know, the injuries and stuff he had to go through. And I don't know whether, you know, what's the proper way. I do think I would like to see the Ranger organization reach out to a guy like that, at least if they could, you know, invite him to whether it's the annual golf tournament at the start of the year and you know, have him around the rink once in a while, you know, have him visible to make him feel welcome in the garden, because he was he played over 10 years for the Rangers. He was a captain. He was at one time the top defenseman on the team, and he was an all-star.
He's still revered by Ranger fans that got to see him play, and they, he was the heart and soul of the team there for quite a while. He was the guy they turned to. A lot of times when he didn't play, it felt like the other team would take advantage of the Rangers, knowing that Bubba was not back there.
Yeah, no question. And I mean, he should be revered like that. Because he was a dominant presence whose career was cut short by a shoulder injury, you know, in his prime. I think had it not been, his legacy would have been a lot bigger. But I can go over the last 30 years, and there are so few defensemen who could play the game, who could skate, and had a physical presence that intimidated and kept other teams honest. And you're talking, Scott Stevens type of players, Larry Robinson type of players that, you know, unfortunately Barry's career was cut short, but he was very close to the caliber of those type of players. So, once or twice a year, hey, anyone heard what Barry Beck is up to? I heard he was teaching helping coach some hockey programs in the Far East. I don't know if he's still doing that, but I still think he should be. He should be a real visible part of the alumni and the organization. That's the way I see it.
Yeah, I was looking over Barry's stats, and you know, he certainly was. I thought he really was a force, and you're right. Not many of those type of caliber of players come down the pike. How about two guys that I think kind of go? Actually, three guys that kind of go under the Ranger radar. Don Maloney was a really. I mean, he was a good Ranger for a long and a fan favorite, and it seems like. You know, a lot of people just know him from his assistant GM days with the Rangers and, what he's done in Phoenix. What can you tell us about Don Maloney and his play?
I think when I started playing with Don, as down-to-earth and classy a guy as you could find, everyone respected him so much as a teammate. He got along with everyone and was extremely pleasant. But even, I'm just saying, when I first, 84, 85, 86, into those areas, he was one of the best cornermen in the league. Don didn't have great speed, but boy, was he strong on the puck, and he could protect pucks and turn his back, and he created so many turnovers and takeaways just being strong on his stick. I think another guy, he broke his, had a bad leg break, whether it was 1.86 or 87, and I don't think he was ever as effective. But but still, again, close to an all-star a couple of years, played in all-star games, and competed. Like, he was a quieter guy, but that guy competed every time he came to the rink. Wasn't a big bruiser, but didn't back down, didn't give an inch to anyone. And I think, he wore the Ranger emblem with a lot of pride. That's his career as a player. I think even his assistant GM duties were probably the biggest responsibility for turning the organization around after some down years.
All right. Now, a lot of guys, I'm sorry I'm getting your opinion on the other players, but I value your opinion. And how about Rea Ruotsalainen? And I don't think he gets his just due in the Ranger app.
Yeah, maybe the best skater who ever played on the Rangers. I mean he's in, if you say Marion Gaborik is a great skater, one of the greatest in the world right now, I mean, when Rayo played, it was a thing of beauty to watch him skate. I know I've had ups. No, I personally have never had ups and downs with Phil Esposito. I've got along great with him. He always treated me great. When I joined the team, Espo was the TV color guy.
Yeah, he used to bust on Rayo.
Oh, man. And it was known that he didn't like the Europeans.
Right.
And I still remember we were playing Edmonton. It was a wild shootout game when we won like 8-6 or something like that, one of those ones. And, you know, they had all their great players in their prime, maybe 85, around that era. When Rayo scored a goal, that the goal of the year.
Yeah.
He picked up the puck in our zone and just, bang, accelerated by a few guys, came down on the D, turned up to another gear, split the D and kind of going across the grain through a backhand top shelf cross corner to beat Grandpierre. And
yeah.
As soon as he scored it, I remember, and, you know, again, when I watched it later on the replay, and heard Espo saying, "What is Grandpierre doing? Why is he having a terrible night?" And this is one of the greatest goals of the year. And so I still remember that about Rayo. I remember him and Mark Pavlich were extremely close friends.
That was that was the next guy I was going to ask you about.
Well, they're two. Guys, I have special memories about. My first couple of years there, I lived in the same complex as them, and spent a lot of time with the two of them. They were, they were both ahead of their time, as far as the way the game was played. If they were in the NHL now, they would both be $5 to $6 million players. I have no doubt about that. Both extremely talented. Mark Pavlich was the most unique guy on the team. He beat to his own drum, but he was such a world-class player for a couple of years, whether it was like 82, 83, 84, 85, 86. Started off, I think, got 10 goals the first 10 games, broke his finger and didn't like the coaches we had at that time and didn't want to play anymore. But when he was at his best for the Rangers, no one stronger on their feet, no one who could play both ends of the ice at a high tempo, could make plays. Another guy, as quiet as can be, but you did not take advantage of him on the ice. I can remember one day we were playing Philly and Jeff Chychrun, who's a 6'4".
Yeah.
Goon,
yep.
As Mark's going around and he two-hands him, and Mark almost, he's got a three lane to the net. He lets the puck go and stops and just like attacks Jeff Chychrun, jumps him or tackles him and just goes cuckoo. And it was like, don't take advantage. I'm going to play an honest game, but don't you dare try and take advantage of me. And I spent a little time with him whenever we drove back home a few times from New York, and he was really into fishing and spent a lot of time in the boundary waters in northern Minnesota, and he took me on a few fishing trips where, and I had no idea what I was getting into, but you would canoe for 10 miles, and then you'd portage a canoe and supplies for a mile, then canoe another couple miles, and then portage. And that's what he did all summer. That was almost his workout.
Wow.
Which it was incredibly hard. But I had spent the whole summer working out. I went to a conditioning camp at North Dakota, my old college, for 2 weeks. I'd been skating with NHL players there. And then on the way back to New York, was picking up Mark. And so this is either 85 or 86. We were going to drive together. So we both had a pair of rollerblades. They were big. Some players using them for training. And I had talked to Mark, and I said, have you been doing much? He said, no, I've gone rollerblading a few times in the last week, but I feel pretty good. I'll be ready for camp. So we spent a day at his house in outside of Duluth, Minnesota. And I said, you want to go for a rollerblade? He says, yeah, I've got a great place. We'll go. And so in my mind, I'm in great shape. And I must be in way better shape than Mark. And so I'm thinking, okay, he takes me to this place. It's like a 2 mile hill, just a perfect incline. He says, yeah, we'll skate up here. So I'm thinking, I'll just stay with him. I'll just, I don't want to go ahead of him. I'm telling you, within about half a mile, I was 200 yards behind him. And
wow.
the farther we got, all I could see ahead of him was him just striding, and getting farther ahead of me, and I was dying. And I mean, this guy was just—he was a natural. He was a phenomenal athlete. I think a hero being part of that Olympic gold medal winning team that changed hockey forever in the United States, and. Just extremely underrated. I think any teammate who played with him from those years would say the same thing about him, because from Anders Hedberg to Bobby Brock or anyone, he was a good player. And he left the game because I don't think he liked being in the public eye. He got frustrated by, maybe things getting too technical and again, the guy came and competed, he came and worked, and then he wanted to have his time and do his thing. So
He loved the game, but they didn't love it enough to, kind of follow the regiment of the coaching at the time,
that's it.
There's nothing wrong with that,
Nope.
Everybody makes their own decisions in this life, and I've surely got enough highlight tape and game tape of Mark Pavlich. Sometimes I think I have one game where he gets 5 goals in a game.
I mean, you got to be talented to score 5 goals in the NHL at any time in any era. You have to have some talent. I mean, a lot of talent. So that says it all right there.
Now you touched upon the USA, and I guess this is fast forwarding to current Ranger status. The Rangers have been drafting a lot of players from the United States. Under 18 team. When do you think that's coming back into vogue in the last couple of years, or is it just the Rangers, or how far has the USA hockey come from since you were part of it and now?
Well, it's a global game where there's so many players from all over the world. There's way more players now, but if you look at the United States, there's players from all over the country. There's players from Florida who are getting drafted in the first round, from California, from Texas. I think grassroots organizations, 15 years ago, a team goes down to Dallas or more. And at the time, I heard there might have been 2 or 3 rinks in the whole state or in nearby. And within 10 years, there's 50 it's grown phenomenally. The number of players has, gone from somewhere in the hundreds to, tens of thousands. From there to even Florida, I think Florida and California would be, when rollerblades came out and roller hockey,
mm-hmm.
there were players who made, started when they were 3, 4, 5 years old skating on rollerblades. And even, at a young age, switched. They got good at that and said, I'd like to try ice hockey. And so I think that has had a huge influence. 1980 Olympic team influenced so many young players, and, you know, 20 years later, whether it was the Leach and Tkachuk and Amonte and Richter era of American players, but those guys themselves have had, I mean, even, you know, in New York, there's a number of minor hockey programs. I know Jeffrey Campbell grew up playing in New York for the Rye Rangers, and a lot of his minor hockey was spent in, you know, living in that area, and he's in the NHL, and, you know, Higgins from Long Island and Komisarek, and the list goes on. I just think it's such a global game now. There's players from Norway and Switzerland that there weren't 20 years ago. Those countries hadn't developed, but it's just the popularity of the sport. It's grown, and it's you know, there's the U.S. is on par with Canada as far as producing the number of players compared to any other country now.
Okay.
No.
Jim.
James, we have one of our regular callers is on the line that wanted to speak to you. Let me see if I can bring him on. Rock, are you there?
Hey guys, how you doing?
All right, you're on the air with James Patrick.
Hi James, how are you?
I'm good, thanks.
Just wanted to let you know I'm a huge fan. You know, I grew up watching you obviously as a kid growing up, and you were my favorite Ranger, and it kills me that you weren't part of the Stanley Cup team. So despite the fact that Keenan brought us a cup, I'm not happy with the way he treated you heading out the door. So, but a big fan growing up, and it's an honor to speak to you.
Okay, well, thank you. Thanks for that. I mean, I still, it's my fondest memory of anywhere I've played, and still, I go back once in a while. I'm more honored than anything that some people still remember me. It's definitely a great feeling.
My question for you, honestly, is I don't know if many people know that you're 13th all-time in Rangers scoring, and in 85 years of Ranger history, I think that's a pretty remarkable accomplishment and something you should definitely be proud of. Just curious, the Rangers have had a lot of celebrations recently, retiring numbers, guys that you've played with. I know you're pretty preoccupied with your situation up in Buffalo, but have they extended any invitations to you as far as coming back and being part of the celebrations?
I haven't really kind of lost touch with the Ranger organization, so I haven't talked to anyone over the years. That probably the celebration, I would have loved to have been at Brian Leach's, but I do think by then I was coaching him, you know, might have been tough on our schedule, but, you know, having played 5 years with Brian and respected him so much as a player and a person, loved playing with him, and he was such a great guy and so fun to watch what a great player and play with him, so... that way I would have loved to have been able to see that or been there for that one. But I think it is tough with just coaching. You know, you start, training camp starts September 9th, and you just don't have much time off. And most of the time the teams aren't going to give you a day off. You can't miss a game to go to something like that. I know I got invited back to Winnipeg for the Manitoba Hockey Hall of Fame induction.
Uh-huh.
But I couldn't go. My sister had to go and accept it on my behalf because we had a game that night.
Oh, wow. I was just curious because I think Lost in the Shuffle, I mean, during the 80s, despite the fact that you guys, you were right there for a lot of the seasons and you played with some great guys, and I feel that the 94 team kind of trumps a lot of the guys that played in the 80s, you know, yourself, you know, Thomas Sandstrom, Walt Dubmy, Ogrodnik, you know, a lot of those guys who I grew up watching kind of get lost in the shuffle because of 94, and I was just curious if they had extended any invitations to you, because I know the fans talk about you. I'm a season ticket holder. I sit up in the blue seats, We were actually talking this season how our power play would look if we had James Patrick and Brian Leach back there. So you're not forgotten as far as the Garden Faithful is concerned. So I just wanted you to be aware of that.
Well, that's, I mean, again, it's a great feeling, and that definitely makes me feel good. Those are definitely some great. I think Thomas Sandstrom is one of the greatest Rangers. I think for 8 or 9 years, that guy was so talented, and again had to play with some European discrimination, against it, which was pretty prevalent when he started, and could play any type. He could play power forward. He could play a physical game and a skill game. So that guy, he is a great player. And I love playing with him. And even, when he went to LA, I followed him, and he had some great years there playing.
Detroit, too.
Yeah, Detroit, too. Yeah. He won a cup with Detroit. So.
He was a fantastic player. But I got to, I think of Thomas Sandstrom, I think of the great shot he had. He had an awesome shot. And some of the dirtiest plays that he was involved with on the receiving end, one by Dave Brown, actually two by Dave Brown, one which I think you probably would get thrown out of the league for a year for, that vicious cross-check he gave Thomas after he had a little scrum with Hextall in front of the net. Well, James, were you on the team at that time?
I was on the team. I think I might even been on the ice. I didn't remember it happening. All of a sudden, I remember Thomas being down, and no one knew what happened. And I remember we saw it after, and he got suspended. I think he might have got 10 games, and it was a terrible, terrible thing. I saw it on YouTube a year ago. It made me sick to my stomach.
Yep.
It made me real sick, have some hatred for that organization, have such a bad taste about the league, to allow a player who was so limited as a player and served only one role, and for him to take out, one of the top 10, 20 players in the NHL, that's how bad Thomas was, to be able to practically try and break his neck with your stick. If he shouldn't have got a year, he should have got life.
Mm-hmm.
When I saw it, my stomach almost turned, and I was going, that was barbarian. And I know there's been incidents similar to that over the years, but that was one of the worst I ever saw. Just it brought back a bad memory, that's for sure.
Yeah, and I don't know how he didn't sustain severe, I mean, that was almost life-ending injury. If you watch that, I don't want to get too graphic, but if you watch the way his neck actually just bends, and then it's just, and thank God, they're a little more aware of this stuff now, but yes, the hatred towards the organization is felt by everybody listening to this broadcast, including the host and the chat room. We do not like the Philadelphia Flyers, mostly because of the stuff they pulled in the 70s and 80s and early 90s. And let's face it, as recently as the Dan Carcillo, Marion Gaborik fight, if you can call it that, which happened 2 years ago, mm-hmm. which is still I know you're not a big Flyers fan, James.
I'm with you there. You know what? When starting with the Rangers and having the rivalry and some of the incidences like that, that feeling's never left me. It's still there. Their fans are over the years. Even when I played in Buffalo, had a lot of playoff series against the Flyers, but their fans very passionate sports fans, but they come as close to crossing the line as any fans, from the stuff they throw over the glass at players or coaches. So
very diplomatic. Very diplomatic.
Yeah.
Well said.
That adds to the feelings I had as a player, which is exact same as your guys. You guys,
James, that brings up a good question. Back in the 80s, when you were with the Rangers and the Flyers were, they were a good team then, and of course the Islanders. Whose fans were worse? Because I mean, in those days, the Islanders filled their building. It's not like today, where you get a free tank, you get tickets with a free tank of gas. Whose fans were worse?
I never felt. I know I know the Islander fans, there was that divide, and it was that there was hatred between the fans, the Ranger fans and Islander fans. I know that. But I never felt that as a player. I know they didn't like our team and they wanted to beat us. But I thought they had more hatred to our fans. And I loved playing against the Islanders in those years because it was such a great rivalry and intense games and the building was buzzing. I just felt that it was like those early Islander teams, I certainly respected the great players on those teams, you know, either competitors, whether it's a Nystrom or Tinelli, down to Trotsky and Bossy, where they were great players, and Bobman was, you know, he played a long time, but he in his prime was very good. But I thought the Philly fans were, I would say, disrespectful and cross the line. I remember one of my last series, maybe one of my last couple of years, we lost in Game 6 in Philly, the playoff series. And as soon as it ended, I remember crossing over, but two fans took full drinks. And one and both threw, one hit Lindy Ruff right in the head, and the other threw, hit, I think it was Mike Ramsey, the other assistant. But, I mean, it was a vicious thing, and neither of them saw this coming, but I saw a fan take a drink and throw it like a baseball as hard as he could from 5 feet away into someone's head. And, I'm, you know, that you see something like that, and you really want to hit the guy with your hockey stick. You know you can't,
right.
But the guy deserves it. The guy deserves to get beat. And they have a lot of fans like that.
Yep. Well, I agree. So.
And they still do.
Yeah, they do. They do. This wasn't that long ago. This was in the early 2000s. So.
Yeah.
Oh, really? Wow.
Yeah, no, when I was playing in Buffalo.
Oh, okay. I thought you were talking about the Rangers and Lindy Ruff as a player with the Rangers. Oh, okay. Okay.
No, he was a coach.
Did you ever play? You must have played with Lindy while you were on the Rangers, right? Or was
Yeah, we played like 2.5 years together, and that's how we met. That's how I ended up coming to Buffalo was because of our knowing each other from our Ranger days.
Wow. How come you didn't come the Rangers way?
The Rangers don't know there. He just told you. He never even gets invited back. They don't offer him coffee, nothing. This machine doesn't even know James Patrick was a Ranger, I don't think. If it didn't happen in 1994, June of 1994, they don't acknowledge it.
Yep,
true. Well, we won't go.
James just agreed with me.
No, he didn't. He did not, Jim.
Oh, was that Rock?
Yeah, Rock.
Oh, well, Rock said it. I forgot Rock was on the line with us. I heard him say that. That was James.
James is a diplomat.
I know.
He's like,
I know.
So, okay. Well, Rock, thanks for your call, man.
Welcome, James. A pleasure. And I hope to talk to you down the road. Good luck.
Okay. Thank you.
Thanks,
Take
Rock.
Care.
Have a good one.
Take it easy.
You know, we were talking about Brian Leetch, and one of the, I think, the most telltale signs for James Patrick's career was the year that Leetch went down and couldn't play in the playoffs. And, James, you had to kind of quarterback that power play and wound up getting, you had a really good, offensively, you had a really good, I think it was in, I guess, 90, 89, 90, where you kept really good play.
Somewhere around there. Yeah. I think it's probably about Brian's about third or fourth year when he was one of the top defensemen in the league. He was a Norris Trophy candidate, and I will be honest. I thought he was one of the best D, but I always thought that it was a good fit. Yeah, Brian was such a end-to-end and two-way defenseman, but he was one of the best offensive D in the league. I mean, even in that time where you look at who were the best D, you look at Bork and Chelios and Coffey, that's when Brian was starting to becoming as good or better offensively than even those guys. And I thought my role, the fit, and the way I played – maybe more of a low key situation was good for me. I thought I always played a two-way game and kept things a little more simple and certainly wasn't as flashy and didn't have the skills to be as flashy a player. But when he got hurt, it just, for me, it meant more ice time. That was probably the big thing. Roger Nielsen was coaching. It might have been Roger's first or second year as a coach, but I just remember I'm starting to get a lot of ice time in that last month and then in the playoffs, playing 25, 30 minutes some games, and I think we've actually lost in the second round of game six, but we had a real good run and we felt we were a young team on the rise.
I think you guys finished first that year. You had some real tough guys. You had a pretty physical team there. I'm looking at it right now. Troy Millett, 305 minutes.
Yeah, and could skate. Was a good skater who played physical. And Chris King was physical. And
Mark Jansons.
Mark Jansons he was tough. Great fourth line kind of face off guy.
Randy Moeller, former Northeast.
Randy was tough. The Florida Panthers radio guy now.
He is? That's great.
He does the radio. He's Mr. Everything, PR, and he does a lot of PR and promotions for the Panthers, and he's really the voice of them down in Fort Lauderdale, Florida. I think it was the good feeling was that we felt that we were a younger team and we had taken a step up by getting to the second round, and we thought we were moving on to better things.
Right. Yeah, I remember that as a Ranger fan. I don't know. This is a question for the chat room more, but how many times have the Rangers finished first since then? I'm going to pose that to the chat room. Jim, do we have another caller?
No, we don't. Everybody else is just holding and listening.
Okay. Well, that's okay. So, Jim, you had a question. Maybe we'll speed it up a little bit and don't want to take too much of James' time, but about maybe current-day power plays.
Well, James, we always, a hot topic of conversation on the show is how bad the Rangers' power play always is. What do you think because obviously, you were a good offensive defenseman and on the power play, what are the qualities that you look for in a defenseman that would tell you, hey, this guy might be good on the power play?
I think probably the biggest skill, there are some D who are strictly shooters, but if they can get their shots off quick and get them on net before the shot lane is taken away, they're a great asset to have. But outside of that, it's probably the patience, and just the guts to kind of stand there and be that last man and still, you wouldn't call it a high risk, but just be able to stay in there, stay with the play. Something that Brian Leetch had, not every D has that ability. I think for the power play, that's huge. I will say that power play, it is so much harder now to get shots on net. The penalty killing in the whole league, even in the last 3 years, has gotten so much better. And we're a copycat league. Once one team starts doing one thing, everyone else sees it and it's working, and then they start doing it. The penalty killing is so much better now than it used to be. It is so hard. It's so hard to get the puck to the middle of the ice and then get a shot through. And teams kill different now. I think coming out of the locker when they change the ice formation, a lot of people don't realize this, but they moved the blue line out 2 feet, the goal back 2 feet, made the bigger zones. A lot of teams keep their D closer to the net. They'll say, we'll give you the outside. You can have the outside. You can shoot from the dot, the dot lanes to the boards. We'll give you those shots, but we're taking away everything in the middle. Way more, taking away lanes and then, pushing players to areas where they're not in as dangerous a scoring area. And then everyone blocks shots. Everyone plays goal now. And compared to 5 years ago, huge difference. Compared to 15 years ago, like an enormous difference. So if Rangers fans are having a tough time with the power play, you know, over half the teams in the league feel the same way. And I know you're graded on a sliding scale compared to the rest of the league. You know, even, you know, I don't know if the numbers are lower than other years, but there's always some team that's going to be the best power play. What are they doing? But it's still, I've seen some teams at Tampa by the end of the year with the skill and the puck handling that Tampa has, they weren't even trying to make plays. They were just getting the puck, moving it. Like, you can move the puck twice, and then it has to go to the net. And some teams that, you know, when things are getting frustrating on their power plays, they start throwing in rules like that. Having net presence and getting pucks in the paint, blue paint, just throwing it in there, wristing it in there, shooting it in there, hope it bounces off a skate. You get a rebound, and someone can, you know, get a chance, you know, get a real good look at the net. That's what the state of some power plays are now, because of how, you know, when things get real frustrating. And again, I just, you know, again, and the Rangers have great penalty killing. They've been up there for the last number of years. They're one of the teams on that side of it. But it is, I know it can be frustrating on the other side of it. But I do think, I mean, they're getting one of the best power play players, you know, over the last 10 years, as far as a guy who power plays a quarterback, has a phenomenal wrist shot. I mean, quick, and he's got a bullet for a wrist shot and has good vision. So I think he's going to attract more people to him, and that's going to open up other guys. So that, you know, that could have a big, that will have a big influence this year.
So, because some Ranger fans are a little worried, you know, they don't know much about Brad Richards, you know, playing Tampa for a while, and he's been out, you know, west with Dallas, you know, not concerning, you know, more concerning the length of the deal, which is 9 years, but, you know, but as a player, where do you assess him? You say he's got a great wrist shot. Is he certainly a playmaker, right? I mean, a guy that, like you said, has good vision. What else do you think he brings to the table?
I think number one is, his biggest strength is the power play. He is a guy who gets, you know, he's up there in power play points. I'm pretty sure when we were looking at his numbers, I know we were interested in taking a run at him, but we didn't think we stood a chance and we backed out. But I know our team was prepared to make an offer, and this is, I wasn't in the boardroom, but that's what I was told. So I know our pro scouts have looked at him a lot and looked at him closely. I think the fit has to be right when you bring in a player like that. He's more on the he's a high skilled player. I think when you on home ice, when you can get him away from certain matchups, he can be very dangerous, and he'll be very dangerous on the power play. There's going to be times on the road where, you know, the other teams are going to put their, whether it's a Jordan Staal type of a player against them, and they're going to try and make it hard, you know, as hard as can be on him. I'm sure he's seen that over the years, but that's probably when he has a bit of a tougher time. I wouldn't call him, by no means is he a physical player. He's a...
won the Lady Bing.
He's that type of player. I think he's got... he's got real good quickness. I don't know how his top hand speed. I think he's okay, not blazing fast, but he's quick and darty in certain areas. But we've always thought of him, like every time we pre-scout him, we talk about his wrist shot. We see him take wrist shots just walking across the blue line, taking a quick wrister, and it's as hard as a lot of guys' slap shot. So, you know, he's got one of those real hard, quick with snapshots, but he's a real good passer.
Is the wrist shot, is it all technique, or is it like just strength, or is it something, you know?
It's technique. It's technique, because there are some guys who are so strong and don't have the hardest. And I remember Darren Turcotte had an incredible wrist shot, and he was a 180 pounds tops. You know, he wasn't a real fit guy, but he could just, I mean, some of those guys who just shoot pucks and they, since they're a young kid and they shoot pucks every day in the off season and they develop that technique, and you know, there's certain players that they can get a puck, get it on their stick, and bang, it's gone like that, and it's in the net. They can, you know, they can do it better than other guys who get it, and it's a slow process, and they try and set it up, and then the play or the open lane is taken away, and nothing happens. So it's technique, but it's something I'm sure he's crafted and worked on over the years.
How do you feel about forwards playing on the power play at the point?
No problem. No problem with it. And you're asking a guy who we gave up the second most shorthanded goals this year. We played Jason Palmville and Tim Connolly on the point a lot. I honestly, we've had defensemen get injured early in a game, and whether we've gotten penalty troubles, but over the last number of years, there's been times where we've played Palmville on defense for a period or half a game, and he's been better than some of our D. And we do throw that in when we do one-on-ones in practice. The guys skate so well now. There are a few forwards who aren't very good backward skaters, but it's not like the old days. So it's you know, even if there is a turnover, I mean, everyone can skate well enough now and just keep the, you know, if the penalty killer gets the puck, you just keep him to the outside, and if you have numbers back, you're going to be fine. It's, you know, we felt more of our goals against this year, it wasn't because of our forward playing power play. It was on, you know, different, some of our defense and giveaways, or, you know, Tyler Myers is a phenomenal player, had a great year, but he had a real tough first 20 games.
Yeah,
he himself gave up a lot of, you know, I remember him having turnovers at the blue line where they went down, scored a shorthanded goal. So that had nothing to do with a forward being on the ice. So we're fine. I think it's to be aggressive. There's times on 5-on-3, we play 5 forwards. And, again, some forwards don't have that same defensive responsibility as a defenseman does. And if it's late in the game, last 10 minutes of the game, that's when you might want to be a little more cautious. But in the second period, you know, when goals are so precious and you're playing a 1-1, 0-0 game, which most games seem to be, I don't mind putting the forward out there and being a little more aggressive.
Yeah, it was funny that you mentioned Tyler Myers. I saw him on a lot of lowlights early, you know, on the NHL Network, you know, and then he just came back, and he had a really good end of the season, and it was good to see, you know, after his great rookie season. So,
yeah, he was minus 17 at one point, and he finished the end of the year at even, like just straight, you know, at zero. So for him to come back from being minus 17, that's a huge hole to dig out of. I think a classic case of things are always tougher on second-year players. I mean, things go well for rookies, and then they think they're going to just step up off of it, but the rest of the league has figured them out a bit, and second years are tough for a lot of players. That was almost the norm, and we talked about it. I think the other thing that he's one of those kids, he's 6'7", and he's lean. Like he's got real good legs on him, but his upper body is lean, and there's always been so much talk about, yeah, you got to get bigger, stronger, wait till he fills out. He's going to be a 245-pound guy, whatever. Well, he went home and tried to get bigger and ate a lot and lifted. You know, he trained hard, but it was all about getting bigger. And, you know, at the end of the year, he confessed, he said, you know, I just felt terrible. I felt sluggish. I felt heavy. And that's, you know, again, I think you know, we talk about being careful with young players with that way. Just, you know, they're going to grow, you know, the way their body wants to, but don't try and force it. And that hurt him at the start of the year until he kind of got back to his playing weight from the year before.
Yeah, you know, I guess just with these young players, they have to grow into their body naturally. And, you know, they're hearing people all, you know, maybe they hear it, you know, well, he's got to get bigger, you know, maybe he thinks he can improve his game that way. And, you know, and it does sometimes hinder their progress. I mean, you know. The Rangers have a draft pick from Moose Jaw, Dylan McElrath, who's 6'6", I think. He's a big boy, and I got to meet him a couple weeks ago. And again, he's very lean. Like, I mean, he looks like a kid. He is a kid. And you say, you know, this is the guy there hoping that will be like a Jeff Bookaboom type. But he's still, you know, 3 years away from even, you know, sniffing the lineup, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And so hopefully he'll have his half the success that Tyler Myers had. Now, I just while we're on the Sabres, your owner is, I got to say, got to be the greatest owner in sports right now, as far as I'm concerned. A fan who has money.
Yeah.
the hockey world is abuzz about Christian Ehrhoff. Have you talked to Christian? Have you? Explain to me what type of player he is and why you guys went after him.
No, I haven't talked to him. Lindy has talked to him a couple times in the signing process. I think the main reason we went after him was because he was the best defenseman we felt who was left, who was available of the potential for, you know, obviously, I think the exit might have been at the top of the list. He signed even a guy who might have fit some of our needs, Hal Gill. He ended up signing, you know, a month before when you were looking at guys who were going to be possibly unrestricted. And our pro scouts felt that Ehrhoff was the best defenseman available going into free agency. And we wanted to bolster our defensive corps. We felt that it was the weak spot on our team the year before, even though by the end of the year it probably wasn't. We had three young defensemen who really ended up playing, you know, developing and playing well. And, you know, by the end of the year, Sakara, Weber, and Butler really came around, and Myers being a young player as well. But we just thought by adding the veteran experience and skill in Robin Regier and then getting Ehrhoff too, it just, you know, we have way more depth now. I think Ehrhoff's game is he was right up there in shots by a defenseman. He can get shots off quickly, and he gets them on net. He's a real good north-south skater. And, you know, so those are his strengths. I think defensively he's, you know, he's not the strongest. You know, something that, you know, we want to work on with him. But it seems more and more now with players, you have to take for strengths, you've got to take some of their weaknesses and accept them and try and work around them and limit those things. So as far as the contract, again, like Richard, this is a 10-year contract. I think the way these things are structured a lot of times is the last couple of years a player might retire, but he still gets paid, or they just let him go or buy him out. The numbers are lower in those years, so they get bought out. So that's the new NHL. As far as our owner, he is an incredible story. He lived in the 70s, spent time, he's from Pennsylvania, but lived in Buffalo for, I think, about 7 years. Huge French Connection fan. You know, Gilbert Perreault was his idol, loved hockey. His kids played hockey, and then ended up moving to, not into Pittsburgh, into Pennsylvania. And, you know, he had an energy company that became real successful, but a lifelong hockey fan and always, I think he had season tickets in Pittsburgh for 20 years, but maintained his allegiance to the Sabres. Even his kids and everyone else in the family were Penguin fans, but he couldn't switch over. And it is so different. We were a team that was constantly told we got to do more with less. We have to draft and develop well. We will lose players. We have to, keep the pipeline coming from our farm team and develop. I will say this. The owner before him, Tom Galisano, when the franchise and the league were going through some real tough times, he stepped in and he saved the franchise. And I believe the NHL would have let it go, like Winnipeg and Quebec, and Buffalo would be without a team. And so he stepped in. He ended up being able to make $100 million, when he ended up selling the team, so it worked out for him. But But he did, he ran it as a business, but he was, you know, he did some great things. But this new owner has come in and said, I don't care about losing money. I have enough money. I don't, you know, I don't care about losing anything on the team. This, you know, I'm going to do everything I can to make this team a winner. He's in the process right now of building a $6 million dressing room. You know, they've gutted the old room, and it's going to be state-of-the-art. So for players and a place to play, you know, everything is going to be as good as there is, from, you know, the plane to, you know, full-time chef. And I know the Rangers have this at their training facility, but Buffalo will have everything, you know, to compete with the Rangers and the Vancouvers and the Montreals, the Phillies, the teams that are real wealthy and put a ton of money back into their team, their facilities, their players, the training facilities, you know, travel, the treatment of players. I mean, this was a week after or 2 weeks after he bought ownership in the team, he invited, on his dime, every player who ever played a game, whether you played one game for the Sabres or 1,000 games, he put an invite out to you to come back and enjoy a weekend, two games. So he flew. It ended up being 125 players that he flew in and put up in hotels and fed and brought, you know, had them in boxes at the game. I mean, he really, you know, that's how he wants this organization to be like a family and be really is, you know, wants to have the alumni involved. And I mean, was so in love with the French Connection, and it was just heartbreaking that, that Richard Martin died. You know, he took ownership, and the first game when they brought him out, they had the Triple Crown waiting for him on the ice, and it was such a it was an incredible moment for him and the franchise, and incredibly 2 weeks, and sadly, 2 weeks later, Rick Martin passed away of a heart attack, who was, again, one of the most visible alumni in this area, had been entrenched here for 20-some years, and this whole city, everyone knew him.
I actually got to see the French Connection play, actually, against the Islanders way back when, and I was a youngster.
Yeah.
You know, certainly we pass our condolences and prayers to the Martin family, just from the Rangers, because a lot of us are older guys. We got some young bucks in the who listen to us, but anytime somebody, you know, leaves us from those memories that we had as kids, it takes a little piece of us with them. You know, it's funny the way that works. So
it does. It really does. I mean, this, the memories you had. You know, my memories of him, watching him as a kid, and then getting to know him as an alumni. He actually was a skill development coach with us 1 year, my last year playing. The year before the lockout, you know, he was with the team and was with us in all home practices. He didn't travel, but, you know, again, was one of the funniest guys. He could be a stand-up comedian. He knew more jokes than anyone, was personable, loved being in the dressing room and in the locker room and kibitzing with the guys. So, I mean, you just, it breaks your heart when that happens. And tell, you know, when you, just what you mentioned there, how it takes a piece of you, reminded me a year ago Willie Huber's passing.
Yeah.
And I remember, and the same thing, you know, and had a heart attack, and still a young guy, you know, just, you know, 50 years old or 51, I think Willie was, and instantly brought back memories of playing with him, you know, 84, 85, 86, 87, and I mean, a funny guy, I mean, a great heart on Willie, big heart, big, you know, lovable, you know, off ice type of guy who everyone, the whole team loved the guy and was funny. And yeah, he was a skilled player on the ice. He wasn't a physical player for his size that I think the fans wanted, but Willie could shoot a puck and he could pass a puck. And,
he actually certainly was a little bit of, if you think about it, ahead of his time, a big guy who could play make. You know, everybody's looking for that type of guy now, you know,
yeah.
You know, and he certainly was that guy. But I guess when you're kind of like freakishly tall for that era, people expected you to hit. And, you know, the Ranger fans are a little bit fickle, you know.
Yeah. Oh, I know. But so I have nothing but great memories about Willie, but it just takes a pity. It really, it just sad when that. When I heard that news, you know, just it was just real sad. That's the only
You know,
And Walt Podubny the year, you know, that year before that, you know, you start saying, wow, you know, I mean, I don't want to turn this show into a downer.
No,
it really, it does have a proper place.
Both guys way too young.
Yeah, they died way too young. Yeah.
Really
good. Well, James, I appreciate you joining us and talking, you know, just going through this a spectrum of topics with us, the old, the new, and the future. And
I enjoy it, Eddie. I mean, I don't mind this at all. I love reminiscing too, I told you before. I mean, I really feel my best years as a player, my funnest years, were playing for the Rangers. So, feel a part of me will always be a Ranger. So
yeah, and you know, the fans still love you, and we're still talking to you about the Garden. You know, we're up in the blue seats, and between periods, your name will come up. And I wanted to ask you about that, the owner inviting the ex-Sabres up there. Jim, let's name some Sabre names that may have shown up. See if you can remember. Did Jocelyn Gouvernement show up?
He might have been. He might have been on the Jerry Club. I think he was there. Jerry Korab was there. Like, there was a big group of guys from that 70s era. You know, the Larry Carrier, Terry Martin. Don Luce didn't come back.
Don Luce,
Well, because he was working, he works for Philly now. I think he wasn't able to make it. But they had guys from the 1970 team. They had, you know, Phil Housley came back. And
he's a great player.
He really was.
Great, played forward, too, but center ice as well.
Yeah. Yeah, John Tucker.
Was Bob Sauvé there?
John Tucker.
Mr.
Bob Sauvé wasn't, but Don Edwards was.
Don Edwards. Great goal.
Phil Mir was. Dave Dryden. and Joe Daly, if you remember Joe Daly.
Joe Daly played with Winnipeg Jets of the WHA.
Yeah, he was the goalie now, the first year in the NHL. Buffalo Sabres, 1970, he was their goalie. So. There was a bunch of guys. Steve Dykstra, remember him?
Oh, he was Goon. I love Steve Dykstra.
Yeah, Adam Creighton. Wilf Paymont.
Wow.
Off the top of my head, I'm trying to remember some of the guys I ended up talking to. So,
Jerry Desjardins, was he there?
I don't think so. I don't think so, but I can't remember for sure some of the older guys.
I love
Paul Sear.
Paul Sear was not there, and because he would have been someone I played Rangers with him, and
James,
he's another one. What's he up to now? You know, I'm kind of wondering. I don't know what's going on.
James, didn't something freaky happen with Paul Sear? Was he shot or something in a bar?
No, he got shot in a taxi in Dominican Republic. He got shot in the stomach.
Yeah, I remember that.
And he was actually, I think it was like when he was still playing for the Rangers in the off season, and someone tried to rob their cab. So,
wow! I love going through the old names. I still get a charge out of it. I really do. I still throw it. Paul Sear. Yeah, maybe I'll try to track him down next.
I got it right here. In the offseason of 1987, he was vacationing in the Dominican Republic, was shot in the abdomen, recovered quickly, and only missed 17 games before rejoining the Sabres in mid-November 1987.
That's a tough guy right there. a baseball player would be out for 5 years. Hockey players back 17 games. Well, James, thanks so much, and we'll try to track down Bob Froese and Paul Sear for you.
Well, exactly. Hopefully, Paul Sear is a little easier than Bob Froese. And if I ever run into Bob, I'll mention you guys, and maybe a year from now we'll do it again. But Jim and Eddie, it's been a lot of fun. So
yeah.
You guys take care.
And good luck to you in the upcoming season.
Okay. Thanks a lot.
Take care.
Okay. Take care. Bye.
Take care.
There you go.
Number three, the great James Patrick. Now they're all yelling. Of course, the chat room being as great as they always are, they're yelling out old Sabres names. And we could have kept that going for an hour.
Jocelyn Gouvernement was there. You play with the Rangers,
Isn't it Guevermont?
No, that Guevermont.
Oh. Okay.
Looks like Guevermont, but it's,
I thought it was Guevermont.
At least that's what Jim Gordon used to call him, but who knows if that was the right pronunciation. Chadwick. And then Guevermont. those were the Ferguson jerseys. The ones with the shield. Gosh. Oh, man. James Patrick, I got to tell you, man, he's just like one of the guys.
Class act.
Every time I see you on the bench, what I kind of was saying there was like, you know, how come you didn't make your way to New York? I'd love to have you and Lindy Ruff as our coach. And he was very diplomatic. But you see how the Sabres are trying to get in the old people in there to make it a family thing?
Yeah.
Can't Dolan be a family man and a fan? He doesn't even know what hockey is.
If it didn't happen in June 1994, it didn't happen. It didn't happen. Yeah, I mean, you know, you see Ron Gressner hanging around the Garden sometimes, and, you know, Duguay's got a job, and Maloney's got a job. But other than that,
yeah, but Jim,
other than that, how many guys they towed out?
Listen, Barry Beck said it on a Paulie D show. He said he went in there, wanted to be like, go to the locker room, say hello to some of the guys, and he was persona non gratis. That's what he said on his show. So I take Barry at his word. I don't think the Rangers organization has any interest in the Rangers, like you said, pre-1994. They don't care. They're still living off Neil Smith. Whether you like or hate him, Neil Smith put that team together. May have jeopardized the team for the next 20 years, but still, we won a cup, and that's all we wanted at the time, and I think I want more. And I just wanted to say that...
Like another one. We'd like another one. But it's true. I mean, you know, you said it to James, and Rock said it when he was on. They had some... I mean, they weren't great in the 80s, but they had some good teams that made some good runs. You never hear anything about it. Never. Occasionally, it'll show a clip on MSG. Oh, it was 30 years ago tonight. Don Maloney scored two goals to lead the Rangers to a 4-1 win over
right.
the North Stars. Other than that, that's it. Nothing.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah. It's a different thick culture now. Meanwhile, this owner. God, I wish I would love to have an owner like this. Flying, yeah. Josh Guevermont in. We could get all your favorites. Roman Indor could come back.
Oh, there you go. Bob Whistle.
Rob Whistle. Bruce McKenna. Bell. Tony McKegney, you said. Let me think. I got to think of some other guys. Vladimir Vorobiev can come back.
Shane Churla.
Nate Sterla, who's I think Linda Hood's favorite player. So anyway, and that what was it? That 85-86 team, the one that went to the semifinals against Wah. That was a good game. You know, that was a good team.
And you know, that team, I always have a soft spot for that team because I was 15 at the time, so I was really, you know, just kind of growing up, you know. And so I remember that whole playoff series. You know, 79, I was 9 years old, and yeah, I remember watching the games with my dad, but how much do you really remember other than what you read, you know? But that 85 team, I kind of felt like that was, at the time, like that was my team, you know what I mean? Like
mm-hmm.
I was starting to come into really getting into being a Ranger fan and learning everything about it. So I always had a soft spot for that team. And completely forgotten by this organization.
Yeah, apparently you sound like you're in a dust storm.
Breaking. I'm in a dust storm.
You're breaking up. So I love playing the Remember When's with James Patrick. You know, you sit around, you go, Remember when with your old buddies? I said, well, you're playing the Remember When's. You know? And now they're throwing out some crazy names. The Kleinendorfs. Scott and who was the other one? Scott Kleinendorfs. The other guy, I cannot remember. Kurt Klein endorsed? I don't know about that. Anyway,
I'm back. Hopefully I sound better.
So the Rangers, well, we got some news. What's going on now that, you know, We don't want to get bogged down in the Rangers, the ghost of Ranger past. What do we got going on? What's happening in Ranger news? Give it to me. Do you know anything?
We're not gonna talk about Jocelyn Gavermont, whatever his name was anymore. We're done with that now.
We're down with the Gouvermont.
I guess it's news. I mean, you know, the pictures have been all over the place of Brad Richards arriving at the Garden and putting on his new jersey, and then I guess they made it official today that he is going to be number 19, which, if I understand correctly, was his number before he went to Dallas, but it was retired in Dallas. So he's going to be number 19. Fedotenko will switch to number 26, which he wore in Tampa. And now Eric Christensen, who was number 26,
is going to be
40, but he should be 86, in my opinion. Or 80 million he could be, his number for 80 million served, because he should be working at a McDonald's or something. Enough with the Eric
Christensen. I can't see any room for this guy on this team.
Oh, come on. Where are they going
to
put him?
There is nowhere to put this guy. Except in the AHL or on waivers.
Exactly. There is no spot for him, nor should there be. He represents, to me, he represents everything that was wrong with the teams of the last 2 years. You know, it's a new day. Enough with the Eric Christensen. I'm sorry, Nick, Phoenix Ranger. I love you. You're my brother. You're my dust storm brethren out here. But Eric Christensen has got to go. He's got to go. Meanwhile, Mike Rupp is going to wear number 71, and I like that. Big guy wearing a big number, big old number 71 coming at you. I like that. Big number.
Yes. I agree with that.
Like a lineman's number, you know what I mean?
Yeah, you're going to notice him right away, and you know, I like that.
You don't want to put no goofy six on his back or 12.
I don't mind. But see, it's different, though, if he were to get a double-digit number of the same number, then he doesn't deserve it. Like, he was a 77.
No,
That's offense.
You've got to be, if he wanted to be 55, that would be okay. Although 55, to me, is a defensive number. I don't know why we're talking about this, but...
But it's all pertinent.
It's July.
Or 44, like Igor Ulanov.
Or Terry Kleisinger.
Kleisinger was 44, huh?
I think so. Yeah, that's right. Marty McSorley was number 55. Is it Dobanowski? He's a 55, isn't he? Isn't he wear 55?
Jovo Cop.
Going back to Florida.
So, in other news, 4 out of the 5 restricted free agents that the Rangers have decided to go to arbitration, and everybody's flipping out, Jim. Everybody is flipping out.
It's a good thing.
Why is it good, Jim?
I'm going to tell you why in just a second.
Right after this.
I'm going to give you... Oh, brother.
Oh, brother.
Let me take a water break. I'm trying to pull up the explanation of why Armin Gillum had a heart attack. Huh?
Yeah, he's dead.
I saw that.
Former net.
Brother.
Was he a New York net?
Yeah. I think just New Jersey.
Oh, okay. Where is it? Here it is. Okay. Finally, this is from Larry Brooks, Dancing Larry Brooks, friend of the show, frequent guest. And by frequent guest, I don't mean frequent comes on the show. I mean he's a frequent guest in the chat room. Okay. It removes the possibility of another team giving an offer sheet to any of these players. It eliminates the specter of a protracted contract stalemate extending into training camp. It triggers a second buyout round late this month or early next month. The Rangers will have each of these 4 players under contract by the first week of August. unless an arbitrator's decision is so out of whack the club chooses to walk away. That's extremely unlikely given the easy way out, split the difference approach to the job that the arbitrators routinely have taken one summer after another. It's fair to project that bookend foundation pieces Ryan Callahan and Brandon Dubinsky will come in at somewhere between $3.7 and $4.4 million per season. It's safe to say Sauer primed for an offer sheet that inexplicably did not materialize over the last 4 days will be in at between $1.5 and $2 million. Boyle is a tougher case coming off his first productive year in the NHL, but he likely will come in between $1.25 million and $1.75 million. So there you have it. It's not a bad thing, good thing.
But Ranger fans are flipping out because, well, the first thing was Dubinsky's doing it again. This is the second time he's going to arbitration. The Rangers are messing around with these guys. People, you need to realize this is the due process of how these things work out. So everybody needs to calm down.
Right.
Calm down. And everything will get resolved. All those guys will be back. And we all can celebrate when it happens. And I got to tell you guys, I like what James Patrick said about Brad Richards. This wasn't like we were hearing it from one of those guys from MSG where we're not, you know, he's going to be, you know, it's going to be all candy land. It's going to be all, you know, beautiful and flowery. And Brad Richards has got this, he's got that. This is a guy who coaches against a guy like this. Just watch for his wrist shot. And I think he kind of intimated that even strength, he can be thwarted. But on the power play, he's deadly. So that's what we need, boys. So I like what James had to say about I like that. I got a ding. So I like what I heard from James about that. I feel better. And you said you felt better just seeing the guy, right?
Yeah, you know, I said this to you on the phone, you know, he signs, okay, you know, and it's exciting, and I'm glad he's here. And like we said on our little rapid reaction show on Saturday, which got a lot of positive response, by the way, you know, I was glad he's here. I thought the contract was great, the whole bit. But then when I saw the picture of him in the sweater for the first time, that was really, you know, kind of special. But that hat's got to go. That hat's got to go. I'm sorry. That hat's got to go. I like what one of the guys said. I think it was James Graham said, is he here to play hockey or soft crimes with Dr. Watson?
What are we, the fashion police now? A guy can't wear a hat when he comes to New York?
Not that hat, no. He's got to get a fedora like your office spotted around town in.
Oh, yeah, I wear those fedoras. I'm a regular madman. Madman. Me and Mario's favorite show. When is that coming back, by the way? I love Madman. So I was glad to see him in the uniform. I think once we see them in the uniform, we kind of start attached. We get attached easily as Ranger fans, don't you think?
Right, right. And I also heard a rumor floating around. I don't know if this is confirmed with our good buddy, Mr. NHL Store Employee of the Month down. I think he's still in Philadelphia. But somebody floated this out in the chat room that the Richards jerseys have arrived at the NHL store.
Ho, ho, ho! They got any in double X?
I don't know. I'm sure they do, or maybe you can order them.
Oh, I may have to get on that, right? I want to get on the bandwagon.
Now, see, I've decided that after many years of just rehashing, wearing and re-wearing my old jerseys, this is the year I get a new Rangers jersey. I'm finally going to upgrade and get the, you know, all my Ranger jerseys are the old school with the red band around the neck. I want to get one with the tie in the front. And I'm trying to decide if whether or not I should get a player and what player. And so I'm still debating all of that because I want to buy a jersey for a guy that's going to be here for a couple of years. And at the same token, I want to try maybe not to buy a jersey that everybody's going to have. I don't want a Lundqvist. Nothing against him, but there's a thousand of them.
There's a thousand.
Throw a rock and hit a thousand people with a Lundqvist jersey or a Callahan jersey. Gabrick.
I'm going to take a gamble because I always have claimed that everybody says, where's your jersey, Mouth? Where's your jersey, Eddie? But I'm at the games and I never wear them because, number one, the ones I have don't fit anymore. But they may be starting to fit soon. But anyway, I just kind of didn't think of it as a G.
Oh! The training's going well? Is that very well.
Very well. Very well.
Good for you.
I'm telling you, buddy.
The show's dropping pounds, baby. Pounds.
Yeah, well, as long as we don't drop listeners, we're okay. I hope my the listenership isn't equates with my weight loss. I don't want to lose any. I'll gain the weight back just to get more listeners.
We'd rather be fat with a full chat room than skinny and empty.
That's right. All about the big money in this.
We'd rather be fat and full than skinny and the instigators.
Right. Whoa, I said right before I knew it. Then.
Oh, Magoo, you've done it again.
So, you know, it's what you call it. You made me lose my train of thought.
I'm sorry.
Oh, yeah.
Jersey, losing weight, going
to
fit.
Jersey, oh, yeah. So, but see, for me to get a jersey, now if I get a Richards jersey, I'm taking a gamble. Because if he doesn't produce, then it's going to be a bum jersey. It's like a guy who's wearing a Drury jersey last year. You know, and if he gets the captainship, Richards, he has an outside chance or a fairly good chance, which I guess we can talk about.
Excuse me.
You know, it could be, you know, a high-risk uniform, especially since he hasn't played a game. But I think I'm going to go with the high-risk, high-reward rather than the safe Callahan or Lundqvist. You know what I'm saying? I think they're a little too safe. I want to be edgy. You know, the show's supposed to be a little bit edgier.
Right. So you're So you're leaning towards a Richards jersey.
Yes. Right. Rene Richards.
Rene Richards.
No. Keith Richards. Yes. I am thinking about getting a Richards jersey.
Okay.
Just over what James Patrick said. It's already got me excited about this guy's on the power play may be worth watching again. But he did make a good point. Everybody's penalty killing is just that much better. Now, that really happened, I think, when they started calling everything and, you know, all these ticky-tack stuff, you know, ticky-tacky stuff. And they had to get better at penalty killing, you know?
Right. Exactly. Well, then I'll get an Eric Christensen jersey, and then you and I can stand next to each other. It will be 1940.
People will boo you for that jersey.
Yeah, I know.
Goodbye. Get out of here, you bum.
Thank you, Costa.
Oh, well, no. I didn't get a chance to ask Costa this question.
Oh, brother.
I didn't get a chance to ask Costa this question if he thought he was going to become a head coach one day, James Patrick. Sorry, Costa. But, and there, you know, this brings us in. The possibility of the captainship. Now we're hearing, you know, maybe Tortorella's come out and said it might be a dark horse. That a guy you don't think it might be. That you wouldn't originally think. So I don't know.
Brandon Prust.
No, Brandon Prust does not get enough ice time to be there.
Well, who else would be a dark horse? I mean,
I think Mark Stahl is a dark horse.
I don't think he's a dark horse. I think he's got to be. I think he's got to be among the you know, the contender.
I could have been a contender.
I could have been somebody. Matt Zuccarello.
Matt Zuccarello. No, he can't even speak the language. Probably. I mean, if you want somebody who's going to speak Hobbit, maybe.
He's too short to be a captain.
He's too short. You can't give a captain to a real short guy.
Oh, this Mark just Stahl. In from the laptop. According to Jim Cerny, there is zero chance of Doobie getting the C.
Jim Cerny and that Fakakta laptop is. God, I can't stand that guy.
Fakakta.
MSG weasel boy. You know, I got to say, fans, I have not missed 1 minute of Sam Rosen and Joe Micheletti. That's the best thing about the Rangers season ending, is that you don't have to hear those idiots. Can't we devise a technology where you get a choice of announcers that you want to listen to on your TV. They have everything else. Say I want to listen to the radio broadcast in high def audio or whatever they have. Maybe I want the radio broadcast. Maybe I want me and you doing the game. Shouldn't the consumer have that choice to turn off that Benjamin Franklin, Toucan Sam-looking bastard Sam Rosen and that creepy laugh, goofy-looking raccoon Joe Micheletti? Can we have a person? God, that laugh is just disgusting. It's a pedophile laugh, ladies and gentlemen. There's something wrong with that laugh. Boy, Johnny, you look good in those little pants.
Oh, man. Yeah, I don't miss Micheletti.
Seriously. This game's got good pace.
This game has got some pace.
Oh, these teams come out. Oh, Florida's not messing around. This they've come out. A great road period by the other team. That's another thing. Next year, Rangers better play much better at home. Enough of this nonsense. I keep hearing Fonzie saying, "Oh, we got to establish home ice the last couple of years." Well, it hasn't happened. Let's see that happen.
Played better at home second half of the season this year, didn't they? Seem to remember.
Yeah, they did. They played better.
Recall.
Yeah, they always play better when it comes to getting to the, when they make their playoff push.
When they're in the mad dash.
They come up out of the gate like gangbusters, then fade, and then come back at the end. But you know what? They have 93 points last year. Well, 80 of them in the shootout. I'm just ripping you. I mean, you know, I can't complain. I mean, you know, I have to complain. I mean, you know. So, the Rangers got a new assistant GM.
I heard, but I can't say I recall his name right off the top of my head.
The Gorton's fisherman, it looks like.
Jeff Gordon? Joe Gordon? No,
Jeff Gordon.
Gordon,
I think.
Driver. Joe Gordon? Commissioner Gordon?
Commissioner Gordon.
Gordon Lightfoot?
Gordon McRae? I don't know. I don't know. What is this guy's name? Jeff Gordon? I don't know. Let me check it out here. God, we're so prepared for tonight's show.
Gordon
get a
from
guess.
Sesame Street.
Gordon from Sesame Street. Yeah, he's the new... might as well. Freaking... who's the old man? Who's the old man in Sesame Street? Mr. Hooper. That's his either. We got to get some Mr. Hooper clips next week for Sather. I'll find them.
Gordon Gekko? According to DB Maven. Jeff Gordon.
Well, apparently he was the he was helping Gordy Clark there and the assistant to the scouting. And now he's become the Rangers' assistant GM along with Schoenfeld after Cam Hope has left the organization. I thought Cam Hope was the goalie for the women's United States soccer team.
No, that's Cam Ward.
No, some other chick.
Apparently this guy, I did see one thing on him. I guess he's a cap expert. And with the guy that left, Cape Hope, whatever his name is, Cape of Good Hope, they needed somebody to fill that role because all those numbers and stuff, you know, just drives the old man crazy. I was told there would be no math. John Guy Talbot, that's it. That's the guy.
Oh, Lord. Well, anyway, so now it's him and Shoney, and Shoney's been pretty much down working with the Whale Pack and
hiding from Mitch Beck.
Yeah, God. You know how much it annoys me that Mitch Beck is quoted on these things? Like, I go to message boards, and it's like they have a link to his howlings.net. Mitch Beck is reporting. That guy deserves absolute no credibility. I don't care if he's on the spot with the guy. guy's a mess.
This classified me as a low-grade moron.
Guy's worried about his affiliation with us because he's afraid the Rangers might get back to the Rangers. Guess what, Mitch? The Rangers know more about me and Jim than they are ever going to know about you when you write that silly thing you write. Nobody cares. You know nothing about the New York Rangers. Nothing about the New York Rangers.
Frosty wants to know if we're supposed to hate Mitch Beck, too.
Yes. Everybody who belongs... Yes. Everybody who's part of the Boucher Underground must hate everyone we hate. That is number one.
You join this cult, you're in for a penny,
yeah.
You're in for a pound.
That's right. Or you can friend him and then spy on him. There's no in between.
There is no dipping your toes in the Blue Shirt Underground pool. You either cannonball in or you get out.
I mean, seriously, do you think I'm fooling around with this show anymore? Me and Jim are fooling around with it. Listen to this intro again. Listen to it.
Sorry.
Won't even play when I hit it. It's so vile.
That's right.
What's so goddamn funny?
Oh, wrong one.
Blue Shirt Underground, motherfucker!
This is an unlawful gathering.
The truth is out there.
You know what?
The gloves
are all... It's great. But you know what it needs? It needs you. It needs something more from you in there, like a little, you know, like a mantra or something.
What do you mean a mantra? You want me?
Well,
to
you know, like a just yeah.
Lead us in prayer.
Know, no, you know what? Maybe mantra
a rant?
Is the wrong. Yeah, something like that. You know, like I don't know.
If he doesn't stand on his head.
No, not like that. No, more, you know, rallying the fan, you know, whatever. I don't know. It doesn't have enough you.
Frosty says it has to be longer. All right, well.
Has to be longer.
I will make it longer. I was afraid, because you know the people's attention span. I kept it to like 49 seconds because I figured, and everybody gets a little bored after, you know, the internet, you know, ADD kicks in.
Yeah.
You know, 15 seconds and it's over.
See, Howie's got the right idea. He says, mosh pit. That's what we want you guys doing in the chat room. We want Mandar crowd surfing.
Oh, boy. I feel bad for that crowd.
<All right.
laughs> I don't think worse could be me crowd surfing somebody.
So, yeah, it just needs a little something from you. I don't know. Like your old Ranger Crisis theme had to... We got a broken MSG, whatever, you know, that needs something, you know, the fans are, you know, I don't know, needs something, a rallying cry, that's what I'm looking for. You with like a rallying cry, you know, you're outside the garden yelling at the
offices,
come on out here, Rosasco.
I like what Frosty says, that music keeps me young. When does Slayer keep somebody young? All right. He needs volumes and volume and length. That's what I say about my hair. Let's see. All right, so I'll make it longer. Any words we can say in that? Maybe, you know, any phrases we can utter? I'll go to chat room, have this.
Why don't we put that up on the group tomorrow?
Yeah,
that'll be
we
tomorrow's,
should.
Tomorrow's question of the day. I'll post that later on tonight.
We have Magoo, you've done it again. I know Howie would like that.
Oh,
yeah, we'll make it longer. All right, if you guys think it's not long enough, I'll make it longer. I still got
the Ranger Goal song intro is a minute 40, so After that, I think they'll start getting antsy. So I think you got about a minute to play with. You know, yeah. Minute 40 is fine. 3 minutes is too long. You know.
Oh, 3 minutes. I mean, forget it. No. TV Baby said, we're waiting for you at the bus stop, mofo.
That's pretty good. And Randar says you need the bomb exploding sound for Robbie.
Or cowbell, says Mario.
Now we're up to a 14-minute intro. You added all these things.
You know what,
this
though? Frost
this
got a
intro
good one.
Would be like the Ten Commandments.
I could get the clip of the old Ranger siren in there. That would be cool.
Yeah, there you go. So. All right, you want to bring in calls to finish the last 15
yeah,
minutes?
Yeah.
All right, let's bring Mandar in, and we'll bring Rock in. And if anybody else wants to call in, 646-478-4692. You want to talk about Richards, you want to talk about numbers, you want to talk about the intro, you want to talk about the outro, you want to talk about James Patrick, I don't care. Good evening, Rock. Good evening, Mandar. How are you both?
How you doing, boys? Hello again, I should say.
Good evening, Underground.
I thought James Patrick was great, man. I mean,
he's just a good guy, man. I mean, he's just a good person. You can tell just by the first few minutes you get him on the phone, and it seems like he truly enjoys reminiscing and talking about the past. And he's just a good guy.
And I liked what he had to say about the current state of hockey, and talking about the power play and. It's good that I can't believe he was pretty forthcoming that Buffalo was considering making a run at him. And I didn't want to get on about the Christian Ehrhoff, but the jury's out on that one.
For paying Billy Leno all that money for not even 20 goals.
Well, we'll see. I mean, yeah, that was a little suspect. But this guy is throwing money around like, to them it's, they've been so restrained cap-wise, financially-wise, they've had to watch their every penny. Now they're just like, they're at the whorehouse with a fistful of 50s. They just spend,
It's like giving Valerie Kamensky $6 million a year, right?
Did you say they're at the whorehouse with a fistful of 50s or the whorehouse with a fistful of 50s?
A whorehouse.
Okay. Because I was going to say there's a difference.
So they could also maybe Bobby Holik for $9 million. That was
well,
another.
You know John Spano.
John Spano.
By the way, Eddie's favorite player today, Eddie's favorite player tweeted today that his tweets were not his responsibility that he got his account got hacked. Did anybody else see that?
Duguay?
Bruno Gervais.
Who would tweet him? Who would hack that account?
Who would hack him? That's what I'm saying. He is a hack.
I know who hacked it. Messer Gretz hacked it.
Trottier.
He calls me up imitating Bruno Gervais every other day.
How about that Bruno Gervais back line with Matt Gilroy.
Holy cow.
That's going to be some back line right there.
Well, speaking of Matt Gilroy, he got $1 million. What were the Rangers offering him? They must have been over like a minor league contract.
Did they
probably just didn't want him.
I don't think the Rangers had made him an offer. They just said they weren't going to qualify him, right?
Right, his qualifying had to be, I think, $2.1 million, and he got half that.
I'll tell you, the days of stuff leaking out are so far gone because Larry Brooks could have been more far off than from what the numbers have been so off on everything. Because they said initially they were offering him a 2-year deal at $1.5 million, and then this guy walks for $1 million to play in Tampa Bay, unless it has to do with just sheer playing time.
Well, it could have been that. Maybe he just thought he needed a fresh start. Maybe he wanted to get away from New York.
Wanted to fill in a little bit more in Tampa.
Maybe he's got a broad in Tampa.
And the ability to be able to play with Bruno Gervais, that doesn't come around all the time.
That's right.
You got to get a special situation for that.
That's right.
Mandarth got that right on target. Now, I don't know. I forgot what I was going to say. It had something to do with Gilroy.
Hi, I'm Matt Gilroy.
Hi, I'm Matt Gilroy.
I'm Matt Gilroy.
I'm not going to miss Matt Gilroy in the least. I don't care if he turns into an offensive defenseman down there or whatever he's going to turn into. I met the guy. He's a nice guy, but get off my team. That's basically it.
I mean, can you see him progressing any more than he's already have? I mean, he's not a young guy by any. I mean, I guess he's still technically in the prime of his career, but I mean, I didn't see him improve. I mean, he played all right in the playoffs, but I didn't see a vast jump in play, you know, from the season before. So I mean, he's what, 28 now?
27,
yeah.
I think. Maybe Tampa. Maybe he'll have a little more freedom in Tampa Bay. Who knows? But at this point, I mean, you're right. He's getting to the point in his career where he's going to have to be considered a late bloomer.
Well, he's running out of time.
But he is still growing into his body.
Yeah, we all know that. And he's working out with his brothers again.
Right.
Lifted weights. Apparently that's when you stink your first year. Apparently when you're a defenseman, you hit the weights. Maybe that's what happened to Michael Delzato.
Maybe. And look, I got nothing against Matt Gilroy. I wish him all the best.
Yeah.
If he scores 30 goals, all the same Ranger fans will be screaming, "Why do we get rid of him?" The same ones that couldn't wait to get rid of him.
Yeah. Well, yeah, you know how that happens.
Be Matt Pote.
I really.
Yeah, you know, it was funny. I was thinking about Pote today for whatever reason. I came across some hockey cards and Pote was in there, but he actually turned out to have a pretty decent career after he left the Rangers, believe it or not. He killed us in the playoffs.
I can believe it. Most people do.
He wasn't even that bad before he became a Ranger either. With Edmonton, he was pretty steady.
Yeah.
But I think he got ran out on a rail out of Edmonton for some reason. He fell out of favor. I forget why. Maybe because he sucked, but I don't know if that was the reason. But I always felt like he got picked on way too much by Ranger fans.
And he had his career year as a Ranger.
Yeah, he made it to the All-Star game, right? He had a career high in assists, no?
11 goals, 37 assists, 48 points in 03. If you got that out of Michael Delzato, you'd be thrilled.
Get that out of his career, you'd be
I just think the Rangers, for whatever reason, they like to pick on defensemen more than anything else.
Because
fans seem to gravitate towards defensemen. Because look how many years Drury
has been for. Because everybody who's part of Blue Shirt Underground knows and is a skilled Ranger viewer, watcher, and analyzer. But any fan that's not part of this group and in this radio show, the last thing they do is see the defenseman, the last line of defense before the goals in the net. So, of course, Henrik Lundqvist is going to get he's in a no-fault zone 99% of the time. In reality, and 100%, and everybody's, you know, some delusional Ranger fan. Listen, I'm not delusional. I wouldn't say that. But sometimes he's prone to give him a bad goal. But I'm not getting Lundqvist. He's a great goalie, awesome goalie. You know, I got to preface that. But, you know, some people see the last guy. Why didn't he pick up that guy? But they don't realize there's a whole play that happens before that that you got to break down and say, oh, this guy didn't get his man. This guy didn't keep in the puck. So, of course, the defenseman looks on a replay when they slow it down, look like he wasn't trying. So I figured that's, you know, why not blame a defenseman? I mean, you know. Meanwhile, Nikolai Sheridev wasn't back-checking, floating. No one's getting on him. You know, everybody wants him back for some reason.
No, who wants him back?
Where's he
going to
play?
Sheridev
had a good season, but from numbers standpoint, but it's horrible in the playoffs. It was even worse when Tortorella came in.
Right.
That was
saying,
a disaster offseason in general.
There seems to be a fondness for him that I don't understand. Some Ranger fans. Not as big as the Paul Maroff love affair. That love affair is uncanny.
And ongoing.
It was
well,
a beer.
How are we going to go on without Blair Betts, Eddie?
Well, Blair Betts was a great pickup by the Flyers.
What a great Jed Ortmeyer.
God, I hated that guy. And Ryan Holwick, he was the worst.
Oh, God. Oh, he was horrible. He cost them game four against Pittsburgh with that stupid penalty. Oh, I can still think. I still think of that game. Well, game three.
Chris Simon.
This is a real fun show. Dropping like flies in the chat room.
Well, listen, it's winding up here. Listen, sometimes
it's kind of hard to follow James Patrick. You know, he had still some good stories.
But he followed the chat room. Just minimize the chat room. Well, what do you care about who's listening? Maybe more people were not in the chat room, but our live listenership is picked up.
Well, the reason, that's one of the throw one thing at you guys. I don't know if any of you listen to, and it's on the website. WFAN, you know, finally decided to have a hockey guy on. I guess Rangers need to spend $60 million for them to have a hockey guy on the station today. And Brad Richards, I thought his interview was fantastic. I thought his answers were, I don't know if he's coached, and granted, half these guys, I'm sure they have someone whispering in their ear, but I just thought he said everything, and he was very forthcoming, and it wasn't any ums or ohs, or he actually knew what he wanted to say, and he was very forthcoming about it, and I was very impressed with his interview today. And, you know, listen, I'm gonna be eating crow if he falls on his face this year, I'm sure, but... you know, he said all the right things, and he seems like he's motivated. I don't know if you guys have heard the interview
can I hear this interview?
If you go on WFAN, the WFAN website, I don't really feel like plugging them, but if you go on their website, they'll have the interview on there. It's with Sid Rosenberg, who's actually a big Ranger fan, but it's a really great interview. So when you listen to
Sid, I'm curious.
Excuse me?
Didn't we have Sid on the show?
We did. Former guest, Sid Rosenberg.
Oh, so maybe you can get him back again, have him talk about it. But
I'd like to have Sid on again. He's fun.
Oh, he's fantastic.
Guy.
He's a really good guy.
He's a good guy.
I tweeted him. I said, Sid, listen, when you have Richards on tomorrow, ask him what number he's going to wear so I can get my jersey. And he wrote me back, like, instantaneously. He goes, done. And and you'll hear it. The last question he asks him is what number. So he asked him today.
Ah.
So I was happy, but I don't know. I guess when you guys listen to it, you can give me your opinion. But like I said, I've been on the bandwagon, and I can't wait for the season to start. Now I'm raring to go.
Yeah. Well, you know, it should be interesting to see if the Rangers' defense gets better. I'm expecting a little more offense out of Big Dunner this year. I think he's going to be and I'm not calling for 100 points in a season.
No, he's getting 100 points.
But I think he's got it in him to be at least go up to the between the 5 and 8 goal mark this year with more assists. I mean, he only had one goal last year. I think he's capable of much more. I'm a little worried about Sauer. I'm going to be I love Sauer, but not everybody can progress forward. And he might. I'm a little worried that he may take a step backwards. I don't know. Maybe just preseason jitters. Even though it's really not the preseason, but technically it is because the season has started. You know, and I mentioned him in the chat room. I think Don LaGreca would be a good guy to get on this show.
Yeah,
I don't know.
Asked
if it's the
and
power.
Ignored.
What?
Asked and ignored. But that was a long time ago, before we were the powerhouse we are now.
Sure,
so.
You know, next year, I actually see him at the Garden a lot because where my season tickets are, there I have the media guys there. So, you know, maybe I can hand him something personally if you want. Maybe you could write something up and hand him something personally. And I can do that, and I can tell him about the show, and because he may be less inclined to ignore me that way, or you, for that matter. We can set something up that way.
Well, you're a big guy. You're a very intimidating young man, and I can see him. Me, however, he probably just laughed. Who's that fat clown? So you never know. I'm going to be in more hot water about Richards because I will have the jersey, and, you know, I'll be loud about it, and I'll be like, come on, he's the best player we've ever had, and, you know, of course, totally overextend myself with ridiculous claims.
He's the next Christian Dubé.
Well, let me ask you this question. What are you expecting this season from Richards? I'm going to tell you what I expect, but I'm just curious. would 20 and 50 be a disappointing season? Would 70 points be disappointing if Gabrick scores 40 goals?
No.
No. 60 to 70, I'm happy.
If he gets 70 points and Gabrick has 20 goals again, then there's a problem. But you're also assuming Gabrick's health.
This is the other thing that
it's all going to come down to how well the team.
Night, everybody.
Right.
If he gets 70 points and they come in like, you know, third or fourth in the conference, that's just fine. He scores 60 or 70 points and they're trying to make the playoffs, it's a disaster.
Yeah. And I'll tell you, I mean, they're talking about this whole labor Armageddon possibly coming up with this whole rollback in salary and an amnesty as far as buying guys out. I'll tell you, Gabrick falls on his face again next season. I don't want to see it because I think the guy has talent, but there's a distinct possibility that he may get bought out. I mean, it could be.
I mean, you know, this seems to be the way of the Rangers, but I just think a healthy Marion Gaborik with Fred Richards, if it can't work, then it's never going to work. So maybe the buyout route will be the – I just can't see how it won't work. But, you know, things like this happen, you know, in Rangerland all the time. I mean, you get the perfect fit that was available for them. So, it, you know, and I don't buy this Sean Avery on the wing. Who are these people that want Avery to play on the wing on that line?
Oh, I know.
What is wrong with these people?
Avery's going to be fighting for a spot on this team.
I know.
And it's all about playing first line.
I know. I mean, and the guy, what? I was talking about on the message board. I mean, on the Blue Shirt Underground Facebook page, which you should go to, the Blue Shirt Underground Radio Facebook page. Join up. Mando, you've been a hot topic over there. I know you're not on Facebook anymore, but people are talking about you. It's all negative, but don't worry. But, you know, we were talking about it. The guy averaged 11 minutes a game last year. Out of all the regular players, he was the guy who was sitting on the pine most of the game. And you want him to play the first line? Get out of here. And everybody's so down on Volsky. Where are you guys on Volsky? I want to get your opinions on him. Are you are you willing to give him a full season in a Ranger uniform, or are you just seen enough?
I'm willing to give him I'm willing to give him to the trade deadline.
And
I actually thought he. I'm sorry.
No, go ahead.
I'm sorry.
What? Three Stooges here. All right, Curly, you go.
Rocks Curly.
I actually thought he did a lot of good things last year. I don't know why a lot of guys were down on him. And I think they're going to give him every opportunity. I think they, unless they go out and get somebody else in this offseason, I think they're going to give him the first crack at that wing position with Richards and Gabrick. I think they're going to give him that first crack at that spot. But I'm with you, Jimmy. I give him to the trade deadline.
Yeah, I mean, I just hate to throw away a guy that's, you know, what is he, 20, going on 26, that has shown offensive ability in this league, you know?
I mean, he's had 50 points practically three or four times. I mean, you know, 42 to 50 points. He's certainly not a head case like Eric Christensen is, you know. Not that I'm saying that that's not really making his value any better than he's not Eric Christensen. But, certainly, I see more of a reason to keep him around than Chris said. Mando, where do you stand on this, Mr. Popularity?
I don't see Tortorella, unfortunately, giving him that much of a chance if last year is any indication. But I think the guy has got great skills. I think he can skate. He's a complete player that was not one of Tort's favorites, so I think they kind of buried him. I wouldn't be surprised to see them buy him out. Now, would I like to see that? No, because I like Wolski. I think he deserves a shot to be on that first line. I think the only problem with that kind of a line is that there's no true corner man, so nobody to do the dirty work. So you got basically three skilled players on that first line. But I like Wolski. I think that guy he's versatile. He can play either wing, and you can put him in any of the top three lines. I like him. I'd keep him.
Now, Mando, buying out Wolski, doesn't that hinder an already offensively challenged team?
Yeah. Yeah.
So I only see them buying him out if they have something else possibly that they're looking at doing. And as far as the UFAs, there's nobody left.
No, well, exactly. And I think they've hoarded the defensemen to create a glut there so they can deal some strength maybe on something. I have to believe that Sather's not done with tinkering with the franchise, but I read this somewhere today. I forget which website, but it's, you know, they're making this team right now this is Torch team, no doubt about it. It's in his own image now. You got his guy, really, in Richards, which was a no-brainer, but still it's a Torch guy. And I'm thinking that non-Torch guys are going to go by the wayside. And I think that Drury was one of those guys, even though the contract and everything else kind of forced their hand on that. But I'm really thinking that they're going to get rid of non-Torts kind of guys. And I don't think Wolski is a Torts kind of guy. And I think I don't want to see it, but I don't think that he's going to make the opening night roster on the other side of the world.
Well, I think Jim hit it right last week. He's got to come to a conclusion that the first line players do your thing offensively. This isn't Volsky's on the first line, but I like how Messing Gretz just put his foot in his mouth. But anyway, so I was going to say let the offensive guys play offense and the whole team is full of third liners. Let everybody else do the defense. I don't care if Gabbert plays a lick. A lick of defense. Joe Messengretz has now compared the fat guy that I filmed at the Coliseum to Coast of the Crazy Greek. Well, this is great. Loves to make friends here at the show. But that's the way I think. And guys, I've got to leave. A dust storm is approaching, and it's because I haven't cleaned my computer room in about 3 years. So I must take my leave of you. Good night, you undergroundians, you underlings. What are we calling these people? Groundlings? Undergroundlings?
Undergroundlings? I don't know what the hell to call them.
Oh, Eddie, did you tell Costa that I put my hair again on the line for him last week?
I
forgot. Oh, wow, that's we forgot to mention that. Yeah. You are once again, I mean, you're a man of predictions. When you come out with a prediction, it happens. Fellas, take care. Good night.
Good night,
hugs
boys.
To your
Have
children
a good night.
And your wives. And I will talk to you soon.
Good night.